Polarization just keeps getting worse in Washington. It's as bad as they've ever seen it, and it seems to be making Americans very upset.
Impeach 45!
This is politics.
Impeach 45!
Is this where we want to set the bar for future presidents?
Clinton was the worst in history.
It was a vote along party lines that made President Clinton only the...
I'm not for gay marriage.
I believe marriage is between a man and a woman.
And so does
Barack
John.
Obama nor
but a
I
number of incidents turned
is
violent
the earth
this afternoon.
Our
limousine was set on fire downtown.
It's my
smoke
decision.
Could be seen
it's
for blocks
not
away.
Baby.
And protesters hurled trash cans and used dive bombs and blasted
the
buildings, sparking
intense
partisan fighting.
What's up, everybody, and welcome back to Bob and Weave. I'm the Bob.
Oh, and I'm the Weave.
And this week, you may be noticing that this episode dropped earlier than normal. Usually, we drop on Wednesdays, if you haven't figured out our schedule yet. But there's a reason we did this episode when we did it, and there's a reason why we dropped this episode early, and that is because this involves a very dire situation. So our topic today is we're going to cover what I'm calling the pending murder of Mr. Rodney Reed. So very quickly, this is the purpose of today's episode. We are going to cover as much of the details of the Rodney Reed case as possible in one condensed place so that when this is over, there will hopefully be a link to video or the podcast where people can direct people that are wanting information about the case to try to get everything in one spot. This is a case I personally feel very passionate about. I'm hoping that we can do something about it. But what I noticed when I tried to research it is there's a lot of little pieces all over the place. It's hard to get all of your information in one spot. So that's what we're going to attempt to do today. Zach, I know Zach's done some research too, so I don't know how the back and forth is going to go this week compared to normal.
Yeah, we'll see what happens.
Because Bobby is a man on a mission today.
Yeah, he definitely is. Bob's ready to go. I've got some notes, but he's got a laptop full of them.
Yeah. So here is the basics of the case and why the situation is so dire right now. Rodney Reed was convicted of a 1996 murder of a woman named Stacy Stites, who was, as far as we can tell, was 19 years old at the time.
Yeah, that's what I looked up her obituary. It did say 1977.
Okay.
So she would be 19.
Okay.
Even though we've seen reports that say 20 and 21.
Right. And that's the hard thing with us not looking at court documents, but looking at online documentation. Everybody is, you know, the information's not all entirely accurate. We tried to cross-reference as much as we could. For example, her birthday. And I want to get into who Stacy Stites was here in a moment. But what's happening right now with Rodney Reed is we are recording this today. It's November 6th. At the time of this recording, and hopefully things have changed or will be changing, at the time of this recording, Rodney Reed is scheduled to be executed by the state of Texas on November 20th. So you will likely be hearing this episode on the 11th. So that's 9 days from now, he is scheduled to be executed. In my opinion, in general, but most specifically in this case, this is state-sponsored murder is what this is.
Yeah, it's really rough.
Yeah. So let me go right from the beginning. Let me tell you about the crime itself, because a lot of people don't know the details of the crime. So on April 23rd in 1996, Stacy Stites was a 19-year-old woman. She was engaged to a police officer, a guy that was a little older than her. His name is Jimmy Fennell Jr. So they're engaged or living together in an apartment. She was working at a grocery store. They lived in the town of Giddings, and that's also where Jimmy Fennell was a police officer, in Giddings. And she worked at a grocery store in a town called Bastrop. She was working the early morning shift because they paid her a little higher wage to work those early mornings, because she was trying to save up money for a wedding dress and things like that with the pending wedding. According to Jimmy Fennell, her fiance, around 3 a.m., she leaves to go to work. They only have the one vehicle, so she's driving his red Chevy pickup truck. So she leaves, she goes to work, and then the store, she never shows up for work. The employees, her boss at the store, calls her mother at about 6:45 a.m. and says she didn't show up to work. Where is she?
Mm-hmm.
Now, it's important to point out that Stacy and Jimmy live in the apartment directly above Stacy's mother. So she gets a call 6:45. She goes upstairs or calls Jimmy, asks where she's at. He says, I don't know. She left at 3 a.m. And then they go out and start looking for her. He goes out and starts to look for her. Jimmy then calls his friend, who is another cop, a Bastrop Sheriff's deputy, Curtis Davis, for help. According to Davis, the first words out of Jimmy's mouth were, Stacy's missing. So they go out and they start looking for her. This is around 7 o'clock in the morning. As it turns out, the truck was found at the Bastrop High School at 5:23 a.m. So somebody, and this is a Tuesday morning.
Okay.
So I'm assuming somebody coming, I didn't find the details of that. Somebody coming to the school, 5 o'clock in the morning, finds the truck there. But investigators didn't connect the truck to Stacy's disappearance at that time because mm-hmm. she hadn't been reported missing yet. It's not till around 8 a.m. when she's officially reported missing that they realize that's her truck. So then investigators go to the truck. At the truck, they find half of a braided leather belt.
I didn't realize it was only half of the belt.
Yeah. So both pieces were recovered. But around 3 o'clock in the afternoon, Stacy's body is discovered. And it is, it's about 7 miles away outside of town. I don't know if it was a wooded area. It sounds like it was on the side of the road. Her body was dumped, but more than just dumped. I almost get the impression that it was posed because there's a lot of mention in a lot of the documentation I've seen that her name tag from the grocery store was like propped up and positioned like in the crook of her knee.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I read that as well.
Yeah. So, and I don't know exactly what that means, but it sounds like it was kind of staged there. It says she was sprawled out. Says half dressed, and she was, of course, deceased at that point. Mm.
And I believe the belt was still around her neck.
It was not.
It was not.
No.
I thought they said it was.
No. So there was ligature mark around her neck, but near her body was the other half of the leather belt.
Okay.
And the leather belt is, they believe, the murder weapon. And so it looks like she was actually strangled so hard with it was her own braided leather belt. That she was strangled so hard with this leather belt that it actually broke in two.
Mm, that makes sense.
Yeah, and one piece is left there with her body. And the other, from what it sounded to me in reading it, the other piece wasn't found in the truck. It was like on the ground by the truck at the high school.
That's strange.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't see that part in my research, but.
Yeah, and so that, like, to me, that already to me is almost sounding like staging of some kind. Like, why take half of it there and put it, is it to help connect the two? I don't know, but so. The investigation begins. For nearly a year, police investigated and cleared more than 20 suspects. Now, Rodney Reed comes into the picture when a Bastrop police officer, a guy named David Board, handed the lead investigator a report where Reed had been arrested in 1995.
I will stop you for a second with this. I know that they did say that her fiancé was the prime suspect straight out of the gate.
Right, yeah.
So that's just clear that it wasn't just straight to Rodney. Like, they did...
Yeah.
Go through a bunch of people, and her fiance was the prime suspect directly out of the gate.
Right. And as it should be, just because, you know, that's how we work these investigations as you start. And to me, as a quick glance at a profile of this, the distance of the body and the fact that it's concealed out away outside of the road or in the woods, separate from the vehicle. This is somebody, you know, there's only a few reasons to do that. I mean, obviously, that wasn't because a passerby found her body.
Okay.
So that means the rape and murder didn't occur right there, which means her body was moved, which tells me right away that wherever she was killed was a problem for the unsub, for the offender, meaning she was killed and actually, I don't know if we know that she was raped. We'll get into that in a minute. But where she was killed, so say it was in someone's house. You can't leave this dead body in your house, so you move the body somewhere else.
Yeah, because it'll directly connect you to that person.
Right. So I think that she was already just at a basic look at profiling the scene. I think we can assume that's not the primary crime scene and that she was moved there for a reason, which means the primary crime scene was going to be a problem for someone. And yeah, there were in the 20 suspects that were cleared, Jimmy Fennell Jr., was one of them. He was the prime suspect, but there's never any explanation in any of the reports why he was cleared.
Okay.
And I'm going to get into him a little bit more as we move along here. But so a year goes by, it's 1997 now. And then Rodney Reed, and like I said, I don't have the court documents for this. We're trying to overview this and get as detailed as we can as quickly as possible. But the way I read it was this Bastrop police officer, this guy named David Board, just hands the lead investigator, who's a Texas Ranger, a report from when Reed had been arrested in 1995.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that incident was a former girlfriend of his had reported to a social worker that he had forced her to have sex with her. So he was brought in and his DNA was taken and it was compared to, I think, semen on her bed and it matched. But then she didn't testify before the grand jury and the charges were dropped. I do want to put out here, because you don't hear a lot of this, just to make sure all cards are on the table. Rodney Reed has never, I don't believe, has ever been convicted of any sexual assault.
Mm-hmm.
But he does have a history of multiple accusations of sexual assault prior to this.
There is a 91 case that's very similar to the 95 case, where it's an ex-girlfriend,
mm-hmm.
where he was forcing her to have sex with him, or at least that's the
right
accusation.
But in all cases, the charges were dropped.
Were dropped, yep.
Yep, because there's more than just that as well.
There was one 6 months prior to that,
uh-huh.
prior to the one that he's convicted of right now.
Right.
One 6 months after that,
uh-huh.
and another one that was supposed to be in 1987 in Wichita Falls.
Right.
So.
And in all cases, and I just, like I said, I want to make sure we have everything on the table, because, you know, also keep in mind that it's easy for someone to say, well, the charges were dropped, he wasn't guilty,
mm-hmm.
but that's a topic for another day, but sexual assault for women is one of the most, if not the most, unreported crimes out there. There's a lot of psychological issues that come along with it. So I'm not prepared to say he didn't commit any of those sexual assaults because the charges were dropped.
Yeah.
That also being said, I don't know anything about those cases, but I just want to make sure people are aware. It's not like Rodney Reed is some choir boy who just got pushed into this mm-hmm. thing. But so that David Board, the police officer from Bastrop, turns over this report, and in that it says, well, they had swabbed his DNA. We have it on file.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in a vaginal swab of Stacy Stites, they found semen inside of her. So they do the comparison. Rodney Reed cannot be excluded. I don't say if he's a match. I don't know what the exact numbers are, because DNA is more complicated than people think.
Mm-hmm.
But essentially, layman terms, he matched the DNA. He then gets arrested. And that was on April 4th, 1997. So almost a year after the murder. He gets arrested, charged with rape and murder. And like I said, they use that 1995 DNA test in order to convict or to arrest him. Now, I want to explain quickly the state's theory on the case, because it should be noted that DNA, that semen, is the only evidence linking Rodney Reed to this crime. And so this is a very violent crime. She was strangled, beaten, dumped. Her car's involved, obviously. Mm-hmm. She's found 7 miles away from her car. So it was dumped either before or after. Something happened. There's none of Rodney Reed's DNA was found anywhere else. None of his fingerprints, not in the truck, not anywhere.
Yeah, you'd have to assume with a violent attack, there would be some defensive fight going on.
Right.
You know, where she's scratching him or something. I mean, there would have to right. be DNA somewhere.
Right.
Or other evidence somewhere.
And also we have the issue of one vehicle. So if we believe her fiance's story,
mm-hmm.
that means 3 a.m, she leaves for a 3:30 shift.
Okay.
Drives to Bastrop. Somehow, Rodney Reed then abducts her, stops the vehicle, abducts her, gets into the vehicle, and then rapes her, strangles her with her own belt, dumps her body, and then drives the truck back to Bastrop to the high school, leaves the truck, and then I guess walks home.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's no reason why the assault would happen if that's the theory, which that is the state's theory, that she would have been going to the high school. You know, there's just a straight route from her house to where she worked. Where along that path do they intersect? Is he in a vehicle? But so there's a lot of logistical problems with the state's theory, but it doesn't matter, because when they go to trial, by the way, Rodney Reed is a black man. Stacy Stites is a white woman, just to make sure that's clear for everyone. And it was an all-white jury
mm-hmm.
in Rodney Reed's case. It didn't matter what got presented. The defense did a terrible job, I think, of defending Reed. But even beyond that, all the state had to say was his semen is inside of her.
Mm-hmm.
Also, another point of key evidence from the state against Rodney Reed was the testimony of the medical examiner who said after examining her body that she must have died within an hour of 3 a.m. when she left the house. And all of that comes together, and Rodney Reed, in May of 1998, gets convicted and sentenced to death. Now, this is all taking place in a small Texas town. Okay, so and that plays here, I think, big time, yeah, as we get into more of the details. So with that information, we have, seems like, a pretty clear-cut case against Rodney Reed.
Mm-hmm.
His semen is in the deceased woman, where she's found dead. He's guilty.
Mm-hmm. And with the fact that they do have these other previous accusations against him, helps, right, lead that cause.
Right. Yeah, because he's got these other cases where he was at least accused of sexual assault. Mm-hmm. But there's a lot more to this story. So Rodney Reed never denied that his semen was inside of Stacy Stites.
Well, I believe at the beginning he said he did not know who she was. Didn't know her, didn't know anything about her.
Right, right. Yeah, I should clarify that. He denied knowing anything about her.
Mm-hmm.
Once he gets arrested, it comes out that he was having an affair with Stacy Stites.
Mm-hmm.
At least that is, I mean, based on the evidence out there, I don't think there's any question about that at this point. I mean, there was
a consensual relationship there.
Yeah, they had a consensual relationship. And that comes from, obviously, some of Rodney Reed's friends. Rodney Reed says that they've been together, seeing each other. And this was tough because he is a black man. She's a young white woman who's dating a white cop in a small Texas town, engaged to a white cop. So this is like scandalous to the max,
mm-hmm,
what's going on here. Reed says that they would meet every couple of weeks, you know, because she had that early morning shift. So they would meet up and then go, you know, like she would leave early. They would meet up, go to like a state park where they would have sex. In fact, he says that's what happened the night before the murder.
Okay.
So that was Sunday night going into Monday morning that he says the two of them met up. They went and they had sex, and then she dropped him back off, and then he went his way and she went her way. She went to work.
Okay.
So this is the next night. Now, there are some of Rodney Reed's family and his friends have all said, yes, we all knew about the affair, but also some of Stacy Stites' friends and family have come forward and say one of her cousins.
And I believe a coworker. I think it's a cousin and a coworker both came forward and said that they had acknowledged that.
Yeah, there's one of her cousins, one of her coworkers, and from what I was reading, several of the coworkers had told defense investigators about the affair, but they weren't called to testify at trial. Mm-hmm. But it seems to be generally accepted that these two were, in fact, having an affair.
What do you think is the theory on why they didn't call any of those people?
According to, I think it was a mistake. I think it's ineffective assistance of counsel.
Okay.
But the defense attorneys claimed that if they brought in some of these witnesses, Rodney Reed's friends,
mm-hmm,
a lot of them had criminal histories and criminal pasts.
Okay.
And he was afraid that by bringing them in, the prosecution during cross-examination would be able to bring up their past and then to the jury associate Rodney with these criminal activities.
Yeah, and kind of destroy their credibility.
Yeah, so he was afraid that it was going to backfire. So he calls two people, one of whom was a local bar owner named Julia Estes, or Estes, I'm not sure how to pronounce her name. But according to Reed's attorneys, she had told them that she knew about Reed and Stites' relationship, but at trial, her testimony changed. All of a sudden, when she gets a trial, she's not so sure anymore. It didn't have the teeth that it had from what she told the investigators.
Hmm.
According to Reed's attorneys, allegedly, this woman was threatened by the Bastrop police officers that there would be problems for her if she testified.
So she was coming forward at the beginning saying that they had a relationship.
Yes.
And then supposedly was threatened by the police officers.
Right. And what we do know is when she gets a trial, it's, yeah, I think, you know, I mean, I haven't read the transcript, but it sounds like it didn't have the veracity that it had when she was telling the investigators originally.
Okay.
And then I think later she said, well, they were threatening her not to testify. And then she was picked up for a DUI right after the trial.
Which that destroys a lot there.
Right. So, and this is all going to come full circle when we get into some of the new evidence as far as the Bastrop and the Giddings police officers that were involved here. But some of the other names, so Stacy's cousin, Calvin Horton, confirmed that he knew about Stacy's affair with Rodney. He even described once seeing them together at a Dairy Queen before her murder. And then a friend of hers, a guy named Ronnie Reveal, told investigators that shortly before her death, Stacy had told him that things weren't good with her fiance and that he had a violent temper. But he was never called to testify.
Okay.
And so there was a lot of these people that were never called to testify. So that's where things kind of start to bring the conviction into question.
Okay.
Is what seemed like a very cut and dry case looks like a rape and murder.
Mm-hmm.
You have Rodney Reed's semen inside of her. That's it. Done. Now, mm-hmm. especially they're from Giddings, Stacy is, and Rodney Reed lives in Bastrop. And that's where she's killed, and that's where her truck's found, and that's where her body's found out in that area. Seems very cut and dry. Well, then we find out that Rodney Reed says that he had sex with her the night before.
Okay.
And we have all these witnesses confirming that the two were having an affair.
Mm-hmm.
And to be fair with that, members of Stacy's family still deny this. I think her mother and her sister, there's a big rift now between some of these cousins and mom and sister. Because they don't believe that she would step out on her fiance.
Mm-hmm.
And so they don't believe there was an affair. So they still believe Rodney Reed is guilty of this.
Okay.
But according to Rodney Reed's story, the semen in Stacy Stites can be explained.
Okay.
And I did some checking and as far as like how long you can still get DNA from semen inside the body. And I've seen number up to 36 hours, even longer than that. As I've, there's all kinds of studies out there, so there's no solid number.
Mm-hmm.
But suffice it to say that it is possible to get semen out of someone 2 days later.
Okay.
Especially, you know, because once they died, any process of that, like, leaving them would be
halted.
Yeah. So if it was 24 hours after they had sex when she died,
mm-hmm.
they surely could still get that semen out of there. So that's a thing. But just because we can explain why the semen's in there doesn't necessarily make Rodney Reed innocent.
You're true. That it's 100% true. I mean, just because it's there and just because it was consensual doesn't mean he still didn't kill her.
Right. Now there was an alibi witness that wasn't called at trial. It was Rodney Reed's cousin, Chris Aldridge. And he says that he not only knew about the affair, but was with Rodney on the night of the murder. He said that the two of them were at the Bastrop Community Center until about 3 or 4 a.m., I don't know exactly what that is.
They were doing some repairs. They were working construction, it sounded like, and doing repairs. Now, I don't know if that was the same.
Right. I thought that too, but then it sounded like, no, there was they left there together.
To go to work.
Around 3 or 4 in the morning, showered, and then walked to work together where they okay. were doing construction.
Yeah, that part is a little confusing.
But then there was something about there was a realtor involved in the remodel project that can confirm
they saw, yeah,
where he was at. So mm-hmm. I don't know. That's something to look up. Do not take our word for it on that. I know that Chris Aldridge says he can alibi Rodney Reed on the night of the murder,
mm-hmm.
and also that he confirmed the relationship with Stacy Stites. He went to trial, prepared to testify, and then at the last minute, Rodney Reed's attorneys told him that his testimony wouldn't be needed.
Okay,
so that he never got to testify.
That's strange.
So all that on the table. It's 1998. They believe there's been justice, and Rodney Reed is sentenced to death. Then new evidence starts to get revealed. Now, you mentioned earlier that Jimmy Fennell Jr., her fiance,
mm-hmm.
Giddings police officer, that he was a prime suspect.
Yeah.
He absolutely was a prime suspect. In fact, he was interrogated multiple times.
I really wish we could see why he was cleared the first time. Like, find some evidence on why he was cleared the first time, because that seems really strange to me.
There isn't any.
Well, that's exactly it. It's like, how did they come to the realization that he was cleared?
Do you want to know my theory? This yes. is 100% just my opinion. I think, and this is just a theory, that the Bastrop police officer that handed them Rodney Reed's case file with his DNA,
mm-hmm.
I think that that's how Fennell got cleared.
Okay.
I think that very likely, again, 100% my opinion, that this was that they were narrowing in on Fennell, so they hand them, well, here, because they know, because there was another witness that said that he was with, I think it was that Chris Aldridge, was with Rodney Reed a few weeks before the murder, when in a Bastrop police squad car,
mm-hmm.
as a Bastrop police officer, and Jimmy Fennell, who's the fiance and a Giddings police officer, in the vehicle, pull up and Fennell threatens Rodney, says, I know, pardon my language, I know you're fucking my wife and you're going to pay for this.
Yeah.
Or I know you are my fiance, whatever it was.
Yep.
He knew about the affair and was pissed at him. He's with a bastard police officer.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that it might have been here's this guy. And so now we're talking conspiracy, maybe framing.
Mm-hmm.
Who knows? But I think it's possible that's how he was cleared. Because there's nothing in the documentation to show why he was cleared.
Yeah. And that would make sense, especially if he knows that they found semen in her.
Right. He knows he didn't have sex with her.
Yeah, he knows he didn't have sex with her. And he's already thinking that this guy is having an affair with her.
Right.
And then they find his, you know, they do have his DNA somewhere. You could say, oh, here's this DNA that we found.
Right. And a couple things with that. One, it could just be, man, I don't know who killed my fiance.
Mm-hmm.
And I know I didn't have sex with her. And I think this guy was. Check this out. Maybe it's his.
Mm-hmm.
Or another possibility is I killed her. And I know the only semen that could be in her is
his. Mm-hmm.
So here's the file. Just theories. So there was the Texas Ranger Rocky Wardlow, who was a lead investigator, said that Fennell was, quote, immediately the prime suspect. He had four or five police interrogations, and Wardlow says that he was, quote, very adversarial. Also, Fennell took two polygraph tests.
Okay.
Two times. In both cases, when he was asked the relevant question, did you strangle Stacy Stites? In both cases, he said no. And in both cases, deception was indicated.
Wow.
So according to the polygraph, whatever weight you put into polygraphs, mm-hmm. he failed two polygraphs about it.
Well, I didn't realize that. I did not see any of that.
Mm-hmm. Also, we were talking about, since we're sent to be fair is fair, mm-hmm. we talked about Rodney Reed's past issues with sexual assault. Jimmy Fennell, again, who was at the time was a Giddings police officer, sexually assaulted a woman in his custody after the murder and was arrested for that and sentenced to 10 years in prison. He just got out in 2018.
So from what everything I've read, he raped the woman.
Right.
And pled down to a sexual assault, like pled down to a lesser charge. And that's why it keeps being listed as a sexual assault and not a rape.
Okay, but he raped her.
But he raped her, is from okay. everything that I've read.
Okay, yeah. And what I do know for sure is he served 10 years in prison for that.
Yes.
So if we're talking about the tendencies of someone to be violent towards women, he doesn't get a pass. If Rodney doesn't get a pass, then Jimmy doesn't get a pass either.
You're absolutely right.
So he's originally a suspect. He's interrogated several times, fails two polygraph tests, and then, boop, here comes Rodney Reed's DNA,
mm-hmm.
and his problems are over. Some things that frustrate me is he becomes a prime suspect, which is a typical course of operation when somebody is murdered like that. You start your circle close and you mm-hmm. work your way out. They never searched their apartment.
Yeah, that seems really odd to me, like why you wouldn't go to their apartment and search it.
Investigators never went to their apartment and searched it. They never even tried to get a warrant for it. Investigating officers said that, well, we didn't have enough probable cause to do that.
She was murdered.
She was murdered, and it's the last place she was seen alive.
Yeah, she was fucking murdered. Why would you not go there?
Right. Even for background for victimology,
mm-hmm.
If you talk to Jim Clementi, even if there was nothing suspected happened at their home, you always go to the home
mm-hmm.
and you search all their stuff because you're trying to do a victimology assessment. Where were their risk factors? Were they involved with anyone? Was there anything that could have led to this death? They never did that in this case.
Yeah, there's no reason whatsoever to not go there.
Also, the truck. Remember, it's Jimmy Fennell's truck mm-hmm. that she's driving. Now, they processed it, I think, for some forensic evidence. I know they got fingerprints off of it. By the way, all the fingerprints found on it were either Jimmy Fennell's or Stacy Stites. There mm-hmm. were, I think, two unidentified latent fingerprints on the truck that didn't belong to either of them or Rodney Reed's.
Mm-hmm.
Rodney Reed had no fingerprints anywhere and anything connected to this crime scene.
Okay.
But before they do a thorough forensic examination of the truck, or allow the defense, and there was no defense at this point because it was just days later.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, that's a key piece of evidence you hang on to. They released the truck back to Fennell, his truck, within days of the homicide.
Wow, that's strange.
So now once the defense comes along, they can't run any forensic testing. They can't confirm anything. The trucks, they give it back to the guy who, by the way, remember, according to the Texas Ranger, was the prime suspect.
Yeah.
They gave the prime suspect back the crime scene.
That's really strange to me. I can't believe they would honestly do it on purpose, but I mean, what else would there be? I mean, that's a strange mistake to make or a strange error to make.
Well, Let me give you a little bit more. You might have already come across this, but as far as what they might or might not do on purpose, the state withheld some key evidence from the prosecution or from the defense. This wasn't discovered until 2001 when Rodney Reed himself, when working on his own appeal, discovered these documents.
Oh, wow.
So he's going to file his own appeal. He's requesting documentation. And here he finds this 1998 lab report where apparently right by the body, right by Stacy Stites' body, there were two beer cans found. And the state did DNA testing on them, which smart.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yep. And they got hits on that. And they, and mind you, this is 98, right? So Reed's already arrested. They compare it to Reed. He's excluded. However, there were two people that weren't excluded, one of whom was a Bastrop police officer named Ed Salmella. I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing that right. Now, he is deceased now, apparently by suicide.
Oh, wow.
The other one was a former Giddings police officer, a guy named David Hall, who was both neighbors and good friends with Jimmy Fennell.
Okay.
So let me wrap that into a little package here. You have her body out on the side of the road. You have two beer cans next to it. DNA on those beer cans. One belongs to Jimmy Fennell's buddy, who's also a Giddings cop. And the other belongs to, I don't know if it was a friend of his or not, but we know that he cruised around with the Bastrop cops because he was seen with them and he knew them, but it's a Bastrop cop's DNA on the other beer can.
Okay.
Now, remember back when I was talking about Rodney Reed, we have a logistics problem for moving the body and truck around. Kind of need more people.
Yeah.
And also, if Jimmy Fennell, who was the prime suspect back then, were to do this, how did he get from where the truck was dumped?
Home.
All the way home.
Which is in a different town.
Right, different town.
Yeah.
He could not have done that unless he had someone helping him.
That's true. And I wonder, just devil's advocate-wise, if the beer cans, I mean, obviously they come back to them, but if they weren't dumped on accident, you know, if they threw her in the bed of the truck, and they just had beer cans. You know what I mean? You throw a beer can in the back of your truck. Not that a lot of people do that anymore, but that's not an uncommon thing.
Right.
And they drag her out and the beer cans come out with her.
I don't think she was right on the, she wasn't on the road though.
Okay.
They were back in the woods where she was at. I mean, I get what you're saying. You know, trying to, is there another explanation for it?
Yeah.
I don't see much other explanation for there being two beer cans right next to her body, except for the people that were helping put her body there were drinking beer.
Okay. It seems weird they'd toss them to me.
Especially being cops.
Especially being cops.
Yeah. So I'm saying that seems like the most likely, but it, there are some problems with that too. But.
So this is 96.
96. DNA is kind of a new thing.
Yeah.
Touch DNA is not a thing.
Okay.
And this is small town Texas. So I don't know what those officers knew. I know that his case was, Rodney Reed's case was the first death penalty case, I think, in 50 years there.
Oh, I do believe that. I think it was the first capital murder case in 50 years is what they called it.
Meaning they're not doing a lot of DNA testing on murders there. So I don't know. But so there's all of a sudden this mounting evidence against Jimmy Fennell as a prime suspect. Now, I'm not dismissing the fact that you still have the fact that Rodney Reed semen's inside of her. But if he raped her and he was stupid enough to do that unprotected sex to leave. Now, that was people knew. That was a way to get DNA back then. You know, touch DNA and some other things like that. So maybe not. People didn't maybe know their cigarette butts could pull them off of. But you know that if you ejaculate into someone, they can find your DNA.
Yeah.
He definitely knew that because he, Rodney Reed, had been through DNA testing.
Oh, that's true. I didn't think about that. That's a good way to look at it. He definitely knew that because he's already been through this once or multiple times, depending on how you look at it.
Right.
So.
So we have to believe he's stupid enough to do that, then leave her vehicle in a very public place. This is rural Texas, where it's sure to be found as soon as school comes into session, with half the murder weapon sitting next to it, and then dump the body in a place where, again, I haven't seen crime scene photos exactly where this is located, but he dumped her body where it could be seen from the road.
Okay.
So one of the forensically and behaviorally, when we're looking at things like this and we're talking about profiling criminal behavior, you know, why would someone do something, right? So why dump her there? Okay, well, one reason for someone to hide that body, which could be dumped in, there's rivers and lakes and deeper woods. There's animals down there. There's a lot of places that you could dump that body, bury it where it wouldn't be discovered because you know your semen's inside of her. But both the body and the vehicle get put in places where they're sure to be found.
Okay.
Separately. I have a problem with that. I don't think just looking at behaviorally, I can't reconcile that with someone that knows there's going to be DNA. There could be DNA testing.
Okay.
On the vaginal swab. What I'm getting at is the whole scene smells like staged to me.
Yeah, because if you didn't know this person, you wouldn't have the connection to this person. You wouldn't have nearly the desire to hide the person or get, you just want to get away from the whole situation.
Sure. Yep. I have some issues with that already. But then we look at here's Fennell's the prime suspect.
Mm-hmm.
Well, how do we know that she left her apartment at 3 a.m.? Because he said she did.
Yeah. And the only other witness statement that I came across was that her mother heard someone leave at 3 a.m., who was the downstairs neighbor to them.
Mm-hmm.
But again, that's her mother saying it.
I don't doubt someone left at 3 a.m.
Mm-hmm.
But that doesn't necessarily mean it was Stacy Stites leaving alive at 3 a.m. I'm sure if her fiance had something to do with this, I'm sure there was quite a commotion.
Okay.
Because they got to come get her body out of there.
Mm-hmm.
I'll be honest with you, and this is just my opinion. My theory is that she was killed in her apartment long before her. And I think Rodney Reed was framed. That's my opinion.
Yeah.
And I will qualify with that with saying this is not a truth and justice case for me. I haven't spent months reading through case documents and stuff. I've studied as much as I can, enough to be able to put this together. But from what I see, that is what makes the most sense to me, especially with the DNA on the beer cans. And then there's more new evidence that came out later, but you look like you have something here.
Well, so I'm not nearly as studied on this case as you are. Mm-hmm. I've done some research. I've looked at it. But I definitely know that I don't necessarily have enough to form proper opinions, but it does look like he is being framed.
Yeah.
Now, there are some things with what you said about her being killed in the apartment. If her mother's downstairs and there's a commotion, it seems like you could hear that unless she's not home, but then you're really lining things up.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that's where I come up with, like, I don't have enough to form an opinion because it's hard for me to figure that out, I guess, is what I'm trying to get to.
And see, that doesn't concern me at all because she, you know, say she's on a bed.
Mm-hmm.
You come up behind her with a leather strap around her neck. She can't scream. You're strangling her you got 2 to 4 minutes before she's deceased.
Okay.
And how much noise could she make?
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? But that is just a theory. Now, I mentioned earlier that at trial, the medical examiner testified that she must have died within an hour of 3 a.m. when she left the house.
Mm-hmm.
One of the biggest bombshells to me is there have been a multitude of very highly regarded medical examiners review the case, the video of the crime scene, the autopsy photos, who have determined that her body was moved. So for any of you that are true crime people, truth and justice people, whoever if you're familiar with Serial, and if you listen to the Adnan Syed Haman Lee case beyond Serial, you know that what became a huge issue was lividity evidence.
Okay.
Haman Lee was found on her right side in that grave, according to Jay Wild's story, killed her, put her in a trunk, dumped her body all within an hour to a couple of hours. But her body had full frontal fixed lividity.
Okay.
So, and what that is, for those of you that don't know, is when you die, the blood in your body ceases to have any pressure or be pumped, so it settles by gravity at the lowest point of your body.
Mm-hmm.
For anywhere from the generally accepted amount of time is like 6 to 10 hours, give or take, depending on external environmental conditions.
Mm-hmm.
But it takes, say, a minimum 4 hours for that blood to become fixed.
Okay.
Meaning if you, unfortunately, with my career as a firefighter, I've had to deal with this many times with dealing with deceased people. You roll somebody over who's been dead for a little while, whatever part of them was down will be like purple.
Okay.
Like their whole body. And it's that blood that's all pooled and then settled. That's called fixed lividity. So in these, ran out of time before I could find the actual reports, but essentially what we have is Stacy Stites has fixed lividity, I believe, also on her front, full frontal fixed lividity, meaning she was laying face down somewhere for a period of 4 to 5 hours minimum for that to fix before she was moved because she wasn't found in that position.
Okay.
Right. And so she's found like on her back, but there's fixed lividity on her front. That tells you without a doubt she was laying face down somewhere for hours and hours after she died before she got moved to that location.
Okay.
If that's accurate, that would mean it is impossible for Rodney Reed to have killed her. If she left her house at 3 in the morning and then he abducts her at 3:30 in the morning and by 6 in the morning, everybody's running around. Her car was found at 5:23, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it means her body was clearly already dumped. So if this is Rodney Reed, right? He had to dump her, drop the car, and then walk home.
Yeah.
So there's no way that all would have taken, her body would have been placed by, say, 4 in the morning minimum,
mm-hmm.
if it was Rodney Reed. It's impossible.
Yeah.
Because her body was moved hours after her. So that pushes the experts, from what I've read through some of the appeals briefs, the experts are saying that they believe her time of death was, and there was also some decomposition, some other things in the medical examiner's report
mm-hmm.
that indicate to them in the new medical examiners who have analyzed this case, multiple, that her time of death was somewhere around 10 p.m.
Yeah, that was a big deal with this, is that the time of death is really inaccurate from what they originally stated. And I know that they said, like you said, there was definitely other people that came in and said that any guilt by this that was medically or scientifically proven was impossible.
You mean as far as Rodney Reed's guilt?
Yeah, Reed's guilt.
Yeah, it's mm-hmm. scientifically impossible, and it is. So if that's accurate, if the time of death is 10 p.m.,
mm-hmm.
if the time of death is literally any time before 3 a.m.,
mm-hmm.
then Rodney Reed could have, and not only could Rodney Reed not have done it, but it points a big fat finger at Jimmy Fennell.
Mm-hmm.
Because he has said he was with her till 3 a.m. So if she was deceased before 3 a.m., then clearly she didn't leave at 3 a.m. on her own accord to go to work.
And I do know one of the big things that comes up with this too is the inconsistencies in his whereabouts. Because I do believe he told somebody at one point he was out drinking.
Mm-hmm.
And then another time he says, well, I was with her until this time. And you know, I mean, right. There's definitely inconsistencies in his statement.
Right. Yeah. So he's, as I said, in my opinion, is looking like a much better mm-hmm. suspect. Not saying he did it, but that to me is where the evidence is indicating. Because you have physical, scientific evidence
mm-hmm.
that says she died around 10 p.m. You have physical scientific evidence in the DNA on the beer cans out at the crime scene that are also tied to him. He has failed 2 polygraphs. He was never cleared by any reason other than Rodney Reed's DNA being found in her.
Mm-hmm.
Rodney Reed, on the other hand, you can absolutely explain his DNA being in her because they were having an affair.
Yeah. And that would lead to some super strong motivation for Jimmy Fennell to commit this murder.
Right. And keep in mind the manner of death is strangulation with her own belt,
mm-hmm.
right? So going back to the logistics of if this was Rodney Reed, and if the state's theory, he's a stranger to her, somehow he manages to stop her car, abduct her, get her out without a weapon.
Because mm-hmm.
if he had a weapon, why is he strangling her with her own belt?
That's true. I didn't think about that one either.
Mm-hmm. So without a weapon, he strangles her, and then like none of it makes any sense to me
mm-hmm.
that it could have been Rodney Reed. So then that jumps us to what's happened to him since this information has come about.
Okay.
There's a long, again, in the amount of time we have, I can't get into all of it, but essentially he's been appealing this thing for 21 years, mm-hmm. 21 years. And he's gotten denied at every step of the way. So the beer cans, that's massive. First of all, that is a clear-cut Brady violation.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the state withheld that, didn't turn it over to the defense. But in order to overturn a conviction with a Brady violation, you have to prove, one, that it happened,
okay.
that it was withheld. It did. And then, two, that it was material, meaning it would have likely changed the outcome of the trial.
Okay.
So the judge rules, I don't think it would have changed the outcome of the trial. It wouldn't have mattered because of the semen. Doesn't overturn the conviction.
I know they've said it several times that the semen was the Cinderella slipper of the whole case.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's, which is baffling to me because I know, like, to the untrained person or at a glance, you know, the original investigators
mm-hmm.
got the semen.
Yeah.
They assumed it was a rape because of where she was at and that she was partially clothed.
Mm-hmm.
But they just assumed that it was a rape. Yeah. And then they find semen inside, and of course it's him. But that's happened. There's been ineffective assistance of counsel claims because they had over 10 witnesses that were prepared to testify that that they were indeed in a relationship, mm-hmm. Rodney Reed and Stacey Stites, and they only called two of them. But you know, then the defense attorney says, well, that was a strategic move.
Mm-hmm.
And so they can't argue strategy on that. And then the lividity evidence, when that came forward, I believe that's where we're at right now. As part of where we're at right now is the highest court in Texas, the Texas Court of Criminal Appeals, that was denied. I believe that was the one that was denied because his previous attorneys didn't file that in a timely manner.
Okay. So it's just a weird, didn't check the right box.
Right. And so this is a problem that we have with all of our cases that we work in on the truth and justice side. Where it's like they're innocent, but there's all these hoops you have to jump through,
mm-hmm.
in order to fit the system in order to get a conviction overturned.
Mm-hmm.
The difference with Rodney Reed is they're about to murder him.
Yeah.
While this is going on, now for years Rodney Reed has been trying to test other forensic evidence and other DNA throughout the crime scene. For example, the belt.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a braided leather belt that was used so violently to strangle her that it snapped in half.
Mm-hmm.
There will be, because of the texture and everything, that thing is going to be full of the killer's DNA.
Yeah.
100%. There's going to be so much of the killer's skin cells on there,
mm-hmm.
because of just the motion and the texture of the belt. It's never been tested for DNA. Rodney Reed wants to test it for DNA. The state of Texas has been fighting testing it. They're arguing to the courts that the evidence has been contaminated. Now, in Texas, you have the right to test DNA evidence,
okay,
to prove any wrongful conviction. It's in their statutes, but it has to be good evidence.
Mm-hmm.
And they're claiming, well, it wasn't stored properly. There could be cross-contamination.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the lawyers and maybe some jurors touched it at trial without gloved hands. So we don't want you to test it.
They're saying there could be other DNA on there.
So what? If you believe if you believe that your case is true, that Rodney Reed did it,
mm-hmm.
then you know even if there's some juror's DNA on there too, Rodney Reed's will also be there.
Yeah.
And you can prove your point and you can shut it down, but they are fighting it tooth and nail. Attorney General Ken Paxton is just fighting and fighting and fighting, testing the DNA.
Hmm.
They've also asked to test the DNA from the name tag.
Okay.
Because that was positioned in the crook of her knee.
Yeah, it seems like it would have some touch DNA on it.
Yeah, there's all her clothing.
Mm-hmm.
So here's Rodney Reed on death row fighting for his life, begging the state to just allow him to test the evidence. Give me the opportunity to prove my innocence is, mm-hmm. what he's saying, and they're fighting him, and it is mind-boggling to me. So where it sits right now, I think it's on the DNA testing issue. It is. Now I'm thinking about it. That has been appealed. That decision to not allow them to test that DNA has been appealed to a federal court.
Okay.
Who is working on it right now? As of today, it's November 6th. 14 days from today. They are going to murder Rodney Reed,
mm-hmm.
while that case is sitting in the federal court, pending, and nobody's doing anything about it. And it's, what is the goddamn hurry? This is why I think the death penalty should be banned. It's an awful thing. It is state-sponsored murder, and it's a punishment you can't take back. They are trying to kill Rodney Reed before they can be proven wrong.
Mm-hmm.
I cannot believe the attorney general, the judges, the courts, anyone, Governor Abbott, who I think is who we need to reach out to now. And I think Kim Kardashian West and Rihanna, a bunch of celebrities are pushing. There's a change.org petition.
Mm-hmm.
Go to that, sign that. There's over 1 million signatures on that. To at least, I'm not even saying let Rodney Reed out. Stay the execution. Do not kill this man. While there's pending,
oh,
I'm getting really fired up over this.
You are. I can see it in your eyes. Ugh. Yeah, while that pending evidence is out there, there's no way you should be doing this. Not one chance in hell this should happen.
No. And again, what's the hurry?
Yeah.
If they don't allow the testing, or they test it and it proves it, then kill him next week if you need to kill him. But why are we in such a hurry to kill a man? And it really fucks me up.
Yeah.
What fucks me up the worst is that there was a time that I was an advocate for the death penalty.
Okay.
And that fucks me up because I didn't know.
Yeah.
You know, I think there's so many people out there, and I hope, I'm praying to God, there are people listening to this right now that were in my shoes that are death penalty advocates that think that, you know, that there's good reason for it. This is the reality of the death penalty. Is Rodney Reed innocent? I think so. Maybe not. But you don't fucking know. No one knows. By listening to what we've talked about now for 50 minutes or whatever, certainly, surely, there's enough doubt where you think, maybe. Are you prepared to kill somebody for maybe? Governor Abbott, are you prepared to kill somebody over maybe?
There's definitely not enough evidence right now to say that he didn't kill this woman, but there is surely not enough to say that he did and needs to be murdered for it.
Right. So, with that being said, before I just babble all over myself anymore, I don't know what we can do other than at this point, it's going to take a stay of execution from the governor.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I know that there's been a lot of other people that have done this, but let's keep doing it more. The most direct way that I know of to reach Governor Abbott is through Twitter, which is at Gov Abbott. That's at GOVABBOTT, two B's, two T's. Tweet at him, go to the governor's website, send him emails, call his office. He's got to stay this execution. Please, let's all come together and try to save this man's life and try to find some justice, not only for Rodney Reed, but also for Stacey Stites, because I do not believe that her killer is in prison right now.
I agree.
I'm done.
Thank you guys for joining us. This has been a tough one. It's an emotional one. Bob is literally teared up right now, and it's so hard to see. And anybody that's watching this right now will see the rage in Bob's eyes and how important this is. So please, please reach out.
Do something about it. Zach, thanks for being my friend.
I love you, buddy.
Love you too, man. Bob and Weave is an NBI Studios production, produced and edited by Mike Bussing, and music by Shane Yoder of PutThemInASong.com. The artwork and our logo was created by Zach, and the video editing was done by me. You can connect with us on all forms of social media at BobWeavePod. And if you'd rather watch than listen, check out the Bob and Weave podcast on YouTube. If you have any questions or a guest request, you can email us at contact@BobWeavePod.com. And if you like the show, please take a minute to go on iTunes and rate and review us. On behalf of myself and Zach, we love you guys. Thanks for listening.